So the thought on my heart this morning is taking instruction. What does it mean to take instruction? If you think about that in your life, what does it mean if you're going to take instruction from someone? You know, do we receive instructions well? If you tell a child to go clean their room, how well do they take that instruction? You gave them an instruction on the job. Thinking for myself, if my boss comes to me and says, "I have something I need you to do," how well do we take that instruction? Do we comply with the request? Do we postpone it? Do we procrastinate it? How well do we take instruction? And it's been a challenge to me. The Lord's put some things in my life recently that I honestly didn't think I would be tasked with. When I first felt called to come into the ministry, I remember Diane and I were talking, and she asked if I felt called to be a missionary overseas, and I said, "No, I really don't feel that." And at the time, I didn't. However, time has gone on, and I've received an instruction from the Lord. And it was a challenge to me, because I got asked if I would be willing to consider going to Kenya for their meeting in December. And the more I prayed about it, I felt like the Lord was saying, "Yes, I want you to go." And I'm like, "Lord, there's one small problem. I don't have the time available to take off from work. And according to our company policy, there is no such thing as taking leave off without pay. And if I don't show up for 3 days, I'm fired. So if I do this, I may be without a job. You still want me to go?" The answer was yes. So I sent an email off to Human Resources and said, "Folks, I have a question. I only have this much vacation time left. This is what I'm looking at doing. I need this amount of time, but I see no provision for taking time off without pay. Is there even an option to do this?" You know what? There is an option. I had to ask. But there is an option, so I've been granted an option now where I will be able to take that trip that the Lord wanted me to go on, in spite of it looking to my human eyes as if it was about to put me into a spot that I wasn't quite willing to potentially go to, if you will. So I want us to consider this morning, I want to start off with some verses in Psalms 32, verses 8 and 9. "I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will guide thee with mine eye. Be ye not as the horse or as the mule, which have no understanding, whose mouth must be held in with the bit and bridle, lest they come near unto thee." You know, this verse talks about God's going to instruct us, teach us, but he wants to do it in a way to where he can easily do that. He can just look at us and we can get what he's wanting us to do, and we're willing to do it. To not be like a horse or a mule that doesn't really have understanding, just going along and suddenly the bit in the mouth is pulled and it goes this way. Bit gets pulled, goes the other way, maybe pulls back, it stops. You know, the Lord can use us like that, but he would rather not. And so it's been a challenge to me. How do we take instruction? And like I said, I'm looking at myself in a lot of this, folks. You know, talking about horses, do you know if you have a well-trained horse, you really don't need to use the bit? It's really not necessary. A lot of horses, you just pick the rein up and touch the side of their neck, and the horse will go the direction you want it to go. It can read your body position. If you move your body in a certain way, a well-trained horse will know what you're wanting it to do. It can take voice commands. Sometimes just pressure with the knee, you can help guide a horse. All of those things the horse can pick up on. But do you know when that bit is pulled, it's painful? It's uncomfortable. It's not the way the horse would want to be dealt with generally. And if you're really trying to take care of your horse, it shouldn't be the way you as a person trying to guide the horse should want to guide it. That's like your, if you want to call it your last resort. So I look at this verse here where the Lord's saying, don't be like that. I don't want to have to use discomfort to put you down the path I want you on. I want you to feel the gentle guidance from me and go there. In James 3:3, I'm not going to turn to it. We have also, it says, behold, we put bits in the horse's mouth that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. The God of heaven wants to work with us willingly. He wants us to do what he wants us to do, but he wants it willingly. If you go back into Exodus when they were talking about all of the gold and stuff that was going to be given to build the first tabernacle and the fine embroidery work for the tent and the all of that, was it a requirement that the people give? If you go back there, you'll find out it wasn't a requirement. It had to be given willingly. It was not something where God was just going to say, you have to. Proverbs 26:3. There's another verse here that I want to turn to because it speaks more about what we can expect if we're not going the way that the Lord wants us. In Proverbs 26:3, a whip for the horse, a bridle for the ass, and a rod for the fool's back. Do we recognize that God has divine control over us? Do we recognize that? Or do we think that we've got control and then God gets to have, I'm going to call it our spiritual part? I've been around people sometimes, they seem like they've got their life that they live, I'm going to say, from Monday to Saturday, and then they have their spiritual life that God gets on Sunday. How do we live? Do we realize that God's got control of all of it? And do we submit? Do we submit to God? Or do we balk? Have y'all ever worked with horses? I know working around with Tom sometimes, especially when he got the wild horses in and was trying to break them, and I would go watch. I can tell you from my point of view, it was more fun to sit outside the round pen and watch Tom work with those horses than it would have been to be in there. Those horses did not want to do what Tom wanted them to do. And there was some correction that went on. Tom had a whip out there and he would pop it and he would get them going the way he needed them to go. He would work with them. Over time, they learned to submit. And standing there watching that, it would have been easier if they could have submitted sooner. They wouldn't have had near the trauma, near the concern. I want to go also read Psalms 123:2. This is a verse that we are all familiar with. It says, behold, as the eyes of servants look unto the hand of their masters, and as the eyes of a maiden unto the hand of her mistress, so our eyes wait upon the Lord our God until that he have mercy upon us. And also in Psalms 25 and verse 15, it says, mine eyes are ever toward the Lord, for he shall pluck my feet out of the net. Do you know if we will learn to look to the Lord first, to strive to see what is it he's having me to do, what is it he wants me to do, and not be trying to figure out on our own, that the Lord will give us instructions and signals that will make it easier for us to walk the path he has for us. We won't feel the whip. We won't feel the bridle turning us as much. There are times you still may feel the bridle. But here it talks about looking to the Lord for mercy, looking to the Lord for deliverance. But I would ask ourselves, what do we look to for deliverance and mercy today? Are we looking towards the Lord? Or do we look towards riches? Do we think money is going to deliver us? I'll be honest with you. While I wouldn't say I was looking towards it, it was a hindrance to me fully submitting quickly to the Lord. Because I realized that if I can't get time off, I'm basically walking away from a job. And then what? You know? What am I looking towards? What about family lineage? Do we look to that to say, well, I come from a good line of people? An upstanding line of people. I have a good family lineage. I think today in our country, a lot of times, political power or position. You look at a lot of people and they want to get into political power. They want to get into positions or they look to political powers to work on their behalf. Do we look at our past deeds? You know, Lord, I submitted in the past. I'm going to not submit on this one. But I'll be all right because I was obedient in the past. But I'm not feeling this one, Lord. You'll forgive me, though. I've been a good worker for you in the past. What about our capabilities and abilities? Do we look at our, Lord, I know what I can do. I can do this, but you're wanting me to do this. You ever think of the story of Moses when he was called to go to get the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt? The Lord went down and started talking to him by the burning bush. And the more he talked, the more Moses brought up why he probably wasn't the best one the Lord should call. To the point it says he angered the Lord. The Lord basically said, I know who you are. And I know you have trouble speaking or claiming you do at least. Your brother is going to be your tongue then. But you're not getting out of this. I want you to do this. But do we sometimes lean into what we want too much? I want to move to James. James chapter 4. Starting in verse 13, this also should be a fairly familiar passage. Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or do that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. And if you read that last verse, a lot of times we stop at the part about we should say the Lord will. We don't go down to the next verse. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Have we ever really thought that our plans, if we leave the Lord out of them, no matter how necessary and seemingly okay, the Lord may consider evil? Simply because you didn't add him to the equation? You know, I have to have a job. I've got bills to pay. Don't you know the Lord knows that? So, was it really that much of a consideration for me to say, well, Lord, I can't do it because of X? I had to chuckle. God apparently knew that there was the exception, even though it's not in the rule book, and I didn't know it. He had it all taken care of. All I had to do was be willing to submit and willing to reach out to HR and say, folks, I've got a situation. Can you work with me? And they came. It was the one email. Yes, absolutely, we can work with you. And if you need help to get the things taken care of in payroll, here's a person to contact. Just like that. And I'm thinking, because it's not in the rule book, I'm going to have to do multiple explanations, escalate it through a whole chain of command. And what I thought was going to be the stickery part of the the deal turned out to be right now so far the easiest part. Some of the hardest part was trying to get the airline's ticket bought. It literally took almost total amount of time, probably 7 hours to get that ticket bought, because every time you'd click on a ticket, they'd tell you that ticket sold out. You go get the next one, well, that one sold out. I will say as a side note, I did find it funny that the tickets I finally bought were some of the first tickets I looked at almost a day and a half earlier, and they weren't sold out. But the Lord knows. I'd like to also consider Romans 5:19. For as by one man's disobedience many were made sinners, so by the obedience of one shall many be made righteous. Have we considered that disobedience is the original sin? That simply not doing what the Lord said was the actual first sin? Sometimes we get hung up on, well, it was eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and that was it. But what was wrong with that? What was the very bad thing of that tree? The only thing wrong with that tree, because it said when God finished creation, he looked on it and it was good. In fact, it was very good. And that tree of the knowledge of good and evil was in creation. So what made that tree such an evil thing? One thing. God said, don't eat. That was it. The very first thing God has asked of man was, will you be obedient? That was it. He still wants obedience. But what do? We like to think. I'm speaking for myself. We like to ponder. We like to put the what if questions out there. But Lord, what if? But Lord, I don't think I can. That's not what God wants. So go to Hebrews real quick. Hebrews chapter 5, starting in verse 1. For every high priest taken from among men is ordained for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins, who can have compassion on the ignorant and on them that are out of the way, for that he himself also is compassed with infirmity. And by reason hereof, he ought, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer for sins. So we see here some requirements around the high priest. The Lord wanted the high priest to have. He wanted the high priest to be a person that could understand and have compassion for the people, could help them. And no man taketh this honor unto himself, but he that is called of God, as was Aaron. So we see here that this was not a position that you could just say, I am going to be a high priest. This was something you were called to do. So also Christ glorified not himself to be made an high priest, but he that said unto him, thou art my son, today have I begotten thee. As he saith also in another place, thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Who in the days of his flesh, this is talking about Christ, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, and was heard in that he feared, though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him, called of God and high priest after the order of Melchizedek. You realize that this verse here says Christ was called of God to be the high priest. Christ couldn't just choose it. He was the Son of God. But this was something he was called to do. God had said, I want you to do it. And it required Christ to learn obedience. Why did Christ have to learn obedience? He's going to be our high priest. How can a high priest truly represent us, if we read the first three verses, if he doesn't understand what it means to have to be obedient, to put yourself down and do something that you may not necessarily think is in your own personal best interest? But Christ was willing to do that. Now I want us to go back to James chapter 4 again. Because there's still one more verse after that part where we talk about whether or not we can say we will just travel to a town and buy and sell, or whether we need to say the good Lord will. Because that section ends with the verse, therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. To him that knoweth to do good, that means you've been given an instruction. Are you going to take it? Plain and simple. If sin is disobedience, and you choose to say, no, I'm not, for whatever reason, do you realize that you've just done what was done in the Garden of Eden? That you're sitting there telling the Lord, no, I'm not going to do what you want me to do. I'm going to do what I think is right. I'm going to do it my way. I want to look at Matthew chapter 23. Matthew 25, starting in verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, or athirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous unto life eternal. I don't know if we've considered this passage much in the way of looking at what it is that they were being judged on. Do you see anywhere in here where those being sent away were being sent away because they had lived riotously? Or because they had partaken of a certain sin? They were being sent away because they hadn't done good deeds. They hadn't fed the hungry. They hadn't clothed the naked. They hadn't gone visited the sick or visited those in prison. They hadn't done these things. To him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, it is what? Sin. Here we have Jesus' own description of the end of time when man will stand before him, and you won't be judged on how much you didn't do of sin. The fact that you lived a life free from what we would normally call sin will not get you into heaven. What God's going to want to know is, what did you do that I asked you to do? What part of the being obedient did you follow through on? Were you obedient, or did you ignore what I had for you? Because you tend to say, well, I really don't think that's necessary, Lord. I've not done anything wrong, and that's just too much for me. I think that's more than I can do, or whatever we may make excuses in our brains. But at the end of the day, if the Lord asked you to do it, and we told Him no, we're in a dangerous spot. We could be sitting there putting ourselves on the left hand with just a simple statement of, Lord, I really don't want to. I'm not going to. First Peter chapter 3. Starting in verse 19. Talking about Christ again. By which also he went and preached unto the spirits in prison, which sometimes were disobedient, when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was a preparing, wherein few, that is, eight souls, were saved by water. The like figure whereunto even baptism doth also now save us, not the putting away of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Have we considered this verse here in verse 21? Not the putting away of the filth of the flesh. That's not what gets you where you need to go. Is it necessary? Yes. If you don't put it away, you're not going to get into heaven, because part of the instructions you'll receive is put it away. But the answer of a good conscience toward God. I would challenge all of us. Where do you stand in your conscience towards God? When He asks you to do something. You know, it is all right. It is all right to reason with God. It is okay. There is the verse that says, come, let us reason together. The thing is, at some point, when your reasoning is done and the Lord hasn't budged from His position, you probably need to say, yes, Lord. I've tried my reasoning and now I will go your way. I would ask us all to please consider, how do we take instruction from the Lord? Y'all pray for me.